Welcome to Gruesome, your horrific, always late podcast. I am Connie, and here with my fellow always on time, but deals with an always late person, co-host Meg. And today she is going to tell us about the Phantom Patriot.
Look, I don't mind. Like, I got nothing but time on this world. Might as well spend it waiting for something. No problem. But I do get anxiety and I hate being late. That is also true.
Mm-hmm. I'm just like, I live my life late. So at this point.
That's a me problem, not a you guys problem. It's a me problem that I have to be 15 minutes early places. Doesn't have to do.
I've never been 15 minutes early anywhere.
My body's stuck in flight. I'm flying there no matter. I'm convinced that that's what's happening. All right, guys. So today I'm going to tell you about the Phantom Patriot. But because I talk about Bohemian Grove so much, it's kind of like I'm going to give you a background on what Bohemian Grove is in the Bohemian Club. And then I'm going to tell you about this crime that was committed by the Phantom Patriot. And it's kind of interesting and very strange. But the Bohemian Club is an elite invitation only social club founded in San Francisco in 1872 by a group of only male artists, writers, actors, lawyers, journalists, men only, and men of means. They happen to be interested in arts and culture and all that surrounded it. And since its inception, this club has expanded to include like politicians and affluent businessmen, more men of means. This club is especially known for its annual summer retreat at what is known as Bohemian Grove in the Redwood Forest of Sonoma County in California. The club had a temporary location until it established permanent headquarters in the early 1930s in downtown San Francisco. But the annual trip to the Redwoods started in 1878. So this has been going on forever. And the retreat, there's spring jinx and hijinks. Okay. So, well, hijinks is the name of a play, but we'll get kind of a little bit more into it. It's normally in June. The main July encampment is like 2 weeks where all these dudes from all over come to this private staying cabins camping excursion. And no female, they can have female guests with them or minor guests, but they have to be off property by 9 p.m. Like, they are not allowed to be there or to stay there. And for a very long time, they did not hire women either. And then when, you know, equal hiring laws came about, they got sued and they had to start hiring women. So they do hire women now, but only in the kitchen. So, yuck. But
what the?
Bohemian Club members, they can schedule private day use at the Grove anytime it's not being used for club-wide purposes. And they are allowed to bring, like, their spouses or family or friends. So if you know a rich man who happens to be in this guest list, that is, like, decades long. The waiting list to get into this club is decades long.
Do we know anyone who's in it?
Yeah, actually, give me just a second. So when we say bohemian, we're not thinking queen. Now I think we think like hippie, like crunchy kind of esque things. But this was really used to conjure up an image of like cultured, intellectual urbanites. And notable members have included Clint Eastwood, Henry Kissinger, Walter Cronkite, Richard Nixon, Ronald Reagan, Charles Schwab, Mark Twain, Jack London. And they gather to socialize and drink, and they put on theater shows, and they do musical performances. And this is something called hijinks. So because women aren't allowed, they dress as women as well. It's like very old-timey theater.
Yeah.
Like antique theater. So one of the controversies you hear about this club is that their motto is weaving spiders come not here. And that implies that like snitches get stitches. Like what happens here stays here. They also have this giant concrete owl that's like their totem and their mascot. And allegedly that's because it's wise and discreet. So they kind of have that, you know, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas vibe. But that also leads to everyone outside of it being like, but I want to know what happens.
Yeah.
During the 20th century, members garnered a reputation involving, because they were doing highly secretive and cultish rituals. And the most well-known one is this ritual they called the Cremation of Care. And it was instituted in 1881. So they've been doing this since the 1800s. And the Cremation of Care is an opening ceremony. And the purpose is to make the care members, or the care members, the club members, carefree. So you come in and essentially they burn this. It looks like a person wrapped up. They light this thing on fire and it looks like they're burning a corpse, but it's supposed to be them burning like their outside lives away so that they can let go and have fun for these 2 weeks that they're at this retreat. And that performance takes place in front of the club's large concrete owl. And they also wear like robes, like black robes. In the year 2000, Alex Jones, the asshole we all know and hate, and his camera crew entered this camp with a hidden camera. And they were able to film the cremation of care. And during the ceremony, they were wearing costumes. They cremated a coffin effigy called Care in front of the 40-foot owl. And he released this footage with his commentary and furthered this idea that the men at this retreat were making a sacrifice to dark forces, that they were murdering children, that they were doing rituals, essentially, right? Mm-hmm. Bohemian Grove spokesperson called the ceremony. They were like, yes, this is a traditional musical drama that we do. It celebrates nature and summertime and being carefree. And it said that Joan's comments were inaccurate, but the footage was real. And I'll find a clip of it to post with this as well, because you're like, oh, wow, that does look scary. I don't know what's happening there. Like, and all these like super rich white dudes pretty much are burning things and chanting, and it's creepy. Spy magazine writer Philip Weiss posed as a guest for 7 days in 1989. And that in 1989, the waiting list was 33 years long. And the Grove had several thousand members. And Weiss published this article called Inside Bohemian Grove. And he wrote, you know you are inside the Bohemian Grove when you come down a trail in the woods and hear piano music from a group of tents and then round a bend to see a man with a beer in one hand urinating into the bushes. This is the most gloried in ritual of encampment, the freedom of powerful men to pee wherever they like, a right the club has invoked when trying to fight government anti-sex discrimination efforts, and one curtailed only when it comes to a few popular redwoods just outside the dining circle. So all he's saying is, like, these guys are just coming here to get wasted and pee everywhere and just be, like, it's like a frat party.
Yeah.
For 2 weeks for the super rich. Now, this club is pretty deep within the Redwoods, and it's protected by private security. And up until 2019, Sonoma County law enforcement actually provided security for the club as well, because very important members of government also attend. The Secret Service also provided security. Another one of the big deals, and something people use an example, is this is where the Manhattan Project's inception came about. So this was where the plans for the atom bomb were set into motion. But when they come there, they're not supposed to work. That's the whole cremation of care thing. You're supposed to like let your cares aside, but you get the most elite people in the world into a room, and like they can suddenly afford to bankroll each other's crazy ass ideas. And so people have this idea that all of these guys are getting together and starting a new world order, and every major decision is being made at these summertime events, and that's what's happening. I don't think that that's the case. I honestly think that this is just a bunch of fucking super rich drunk guys that can't always get drunk in front of people, you know?
I think that this fascination was kind of escalated with like Epstein's Island and like...
Oh, yeah. It's definitely increased in the last just probably decade. I think people have been more like open about protesting it. There are protests every single year there protesting this exact, like their events.
I just think that they wouldn't be as... I'm not saying sketchy shit doesn't go on, because I do think once you get to a certain level of wealth, you have the mindset that you can do whatever you want with no repercussions. And
you're around a bunch of other, like, drunk dudes who are like, yeah, dude, fucking do it. You know?
Yeah, it's like, if you... It's not like, oh, my daddy's a lawyer, I'm in a frat. It's like, I own the fucking world. I'm in this club. Yeah. And then it's
worth $3 billion. How can we fuck shit up?
Yeah, it's a whole different level. Like, it's...
Yeah, because we kind of talked about this when we talked about Bohemian Girl last time. It becomes not... Because when you can do anything, it's like, well, how far will they let you take it? Mm-hmm. So I agree that I do think that that sparked a lot of the fascination with it. And do I think sketchy shit goes on there? For sure. Like,
yeah,
absolutely. There's some law breaking happening here. Do I think it's like a giant cult where they're sacrificing children? No, I don't. I think that it's a fucking bunch of drunk art students for the most part. What I really, I have a very, it's one of just like my niches that I kind of dig into. And every time I hear about it, I'm just equally as fascinated. And I always think of something different when I talk about it. But because I talk about it so much, I wanted to give you a more thorough idea of what it is. But what I really want to talk about is the time when Bohemian Grove and a subculture of underground wannabe superheroes called real life superheroes collided. Now, real life superheroes is a term coined by the news for the phenomenon where people take on personas partially inspired by fictional superheroes, like comic books or movies, and people make their own superhero personas and go out into the world and literally fight crime. Like, there are people, especially in major cities, doing this right now, and they have been doing it since the 70s. In the 70s, there was a group called the Guardian Angels that started as just like a squad of volunteer citizens to watch the New York City subways, which were lawless in the 70s. And the Guardian Angels were like vigilante neighborhood watch that gained mainstream acceptance. People were like, yeah, awesome, thank you, we need this protection. And it's still around. It's more like a volunteer organization, and they have like uniforms, and they wear like a red beret and a red jacket, but they protect New York City subways. In 2008, Rolling Stone did a write-up on real life superheroes and the shift they made onto the internet. But some real-life superheroes have adopted different labels for themselves because they don't like this term and the way the news has spun it. So you might hear them referred to as, like, extreme altruists or ex-alt, costumed vigilantes, costumed activists, citizen heroes, and it's an attempt to distinguish themselves from other superheroes. Internet tends to ruin things, so I think that Alex Jones is actually a really good example of this. And that video that Jones made of Bohemian Grove and his commentary on it caught the attention of a man who called himself the Phantom Patriot, and this was his made-up superhero persona. The Phantom Patriot's name is actually Richard McCaslin, and McCaslin had developed a fascination with comic books and superheroes when he was growing up in Zanesville, Ohio. He joined the Marines, and he was like, I'm going to become a real-life superhero in the Marines. But he was honorably discharged from the Marine Corps, and McCaslin just kept developing his superhero identity. He became a person or character called the Lynx in 1985, and he would patrol Zanesville, Ohio, with a teenage sidekick named Ironclaw. And he continued to just develop more and more personas. He went on to live in Austin, Texas, and Carson City, and Las Vegas, Nevada. He worked as Batman, as a Batman stuntman at Six Flags Astro World. McCaslin was an avid fan of country music singer Shelley Wright. In 2001, he went to a charity auction and placed a winning bid of $14,500 for dinner with the performer. The proceeds were to benefit Wright's Reading, which was her writing and rhythm foundation for art students. And there were files released with the Freedom of Information Act that McCaslin stalked Shelley Wright after this dinner, and he sent mails to her fan group. He sent a VHS tape to her brother. He showed up at her concerts, tried to slip her notes, not unlike what we kind of just talked about.
Yeah.
On January 19th, 2002, McCaslin attempted a raid on the Bohemian Grove while dressed as his alter ego, the Phantom Patriot. Jones's video had led McCaslin to believe that pedophilia and ritualistic child sacrifice was taking place at the campground, and McCaslin planned to burn that massive owl statue down because he believed that it was carved out of redwood and it was an emblem of the Canaanite god Moloch, who is associated with child sacrifice. And Moloch is a real thing, but it's actually like, it has a big bull head. It's not an owl at all. Before he left Austin on his mission, McCaslin claims that he spoke directly with Jones about Bohemian Grove, but says he didn't tell Jones about his plans to go there. So he put on his skull mask and his blue jumpsuit with the Phantom Patriot written in red across his chest. McCaslin entered the campground armed with a pump-action rifle, shotgun hybrid, a 45 caliber handgun, a crossbow, a 2-foot-long sword, a knife, and a fireworks mortar tube.
Where did he hide all this stuff in that suit?
He kept it all strapped to him like a super, like Batman, you know, like utility belt style.
Oh, I guess that's true.
He was truly looking like a superhero. But it was January, and the camp was fully deserted except for some staff. But fully armed, he walked through the redwoods until he found himself in the main encampment. Upon entering the grove, McCaslin discovered that the owl was made of concrete, not wood, and it could not be destroyed without heavy-duty explosives, but he had really only brought, like, fireworks. McCaslin failed to find any evidence of any kind of sacrificial rituals that he believed he was going to interrupt. Like, he thought he was going to sneak in there in the middle of the night and catch all these people performing these rituals. So after wandering around and searching, he became lost on the grounds. The batteries in his flashlight died. He didn't bring spares, and he kicked in the door to a cabin and slept in it overnight. The next morning, January 20th, McCaslin set fire to an empty banquet hall, which triggered an alarm, and he encountered a groundskeeper named Fred Yeager, a maintenance worker named Bob Hipkiss. So McCaslin pointed his MK1 rifle at Yeager as he sat in his security booth. He thought that he had a gun, but he was just on the phone. And then law enforcement came, and they surrounded McCaslin's truck. They had a tense armed standoff, and McCaslin was like, no, I've been talking to T. Krulos, who was an author writing a book about the real-life superhero movement. And he did talk to him about it, and he talked about that he wasn't going to get violent because he had to see Shelley ride again. He wouldn't be able to become violent because then he would be in jail and he couldn't go see her again. He was briefly held at the mental health ward of the Sonoma County Jail, and he was later convicted on felony charges of arson, burglary, brandishing a weapon at a peace officer, and two counts for being armed and wearing a bulletproof vest. He was imprisoned, but he got paroled on May 19th, 2008. On June 28th, 2011, he had started a new superhero persona. He was using the name Thought Crime, and McCaslin protested outside of the Alcoa plant in Davenport, Iowa, where Barack Obama was speaking. He accused Obama and the Bushes and the Clintons of being reptoid human hybrids or blue blood, and he was there to expose them. A report filed by the Washington, D.C. Metropolitan Police Department on October 15, 2018 indicated that McCaslin attempted suicide. They found him suffering from a head injury inside of his truck parked in an alley next to the House of the Temple, which was the Masonic Temple, and the Freemasons were a frequent subject of McCaslin's conspiracy theories. He was pronounced dead the following day. McCaslin was profiled in T. Krulos's 2013 book, Heroes in the Night, Inside the Real-Life Superhero Movement, and even more extensively in Krulos's 2020 book, American Madness, The Story of the Phantom Patriot and How Conspiracy Theorists Hijacked American Consciousness. So, there have been real crimes that have happened there.
My conspiracy theory is... you're outside of a Masonic temple. Did you do it yourself?
Or did they get you finally? Mm-hmm. I think that he was sick. And I actually have not read the 2020 book. I briefed the 2013 book. But I do think it's true that, you know, there's a very fine line between that, like, patriotism and wanting to, like, save your country and, like, full-blown conspiracy theorist.
Oh, I agree. Because I would say I teeter-totter more towards, like, yeah, this is happening. But that's just the way my brain works. My brother is full on the opposite side of it, like, full conspiracy theory, full, like, some of the stuff he says, I'm like, okay. He made me sit down in high school once and watch, like, a 3-hour long YouTube video on lizard people.
Zeitgeist was that? Oh wait, no, that wasn't it, was it? It was one that, like, another. I think my dad made me watch that one.
I don't even remember what it was, but I had a lot of videos.
They're always there, and they've always been there.
I just think now it's more. You have more tools to get them. Like, before, it was just like people whispering, like, this is what's happening, but now you have, everyone has platforms.
Yeah, and people like Alex Jones, who, you know, say, like, oh, you know, that school shooting was staged. Those were all actors. Like, fuck that guy, 100%. And I'm glad he got sued, and I'm glad that he lost. And him riling up the masses who are, like, easy to believe him, like people like your brother or like, mm-hmm. you know, Richard McCaslin, who are willing to go, like, yeah, I am in. And they're, you know, I'm not saying your brother is willing to do something about it, but people are.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you get the people who have
storm the Capitol, right?
Yeah, people who are having mental health struggles, and absolutely. They catch them on the right day, and then it's all hell breaks loose.
Yep. And obviously, this guy had some stuff going on, anyways, because he's
living as a superhero.
Living as a superhero. He's stalking a country music singer. He is, you know, continuously creating new superhero personalities and moving from place to place to, like, start anew. The fact that he had a teenage sidekick named Ironclaw did make me laugh. But
I would want him to be called Moose Knuckle, but that's just me.
That's your sidekick name. Moose
Knuckle. Lobster Claw and Moose Knuckle. That's the two of us right now.
We should cosplay that for Comic-Con. We're our own superheroes, Lobster Claw and Moose Knuckle. Oh, that's hilarious. But yeah, that is my little mini there.
It's a good one. I dig it. I am fascinated with what the, and I do believe I'm, and it's not even like, I do believe that if we truly knew who was like at Epstein's Island participating in some of the shit that went on, I think we would all be shocked.
Yeah, like, for sure.
I think that there are eventually people will eventually will come out. Eventually we'll like have an idea. I do think that you get to this level of money where you're just like, you know, the normal stuff isn't enough. I think I'm going to hunt people. Yeah. Like, cause you know, like that happens. That's not,
that's one of the things, that's one of the conspiracy theories about this. Like they're in the woods, they're letting people go, they're hunting them. There are, you know, there are horror movies based on that. Like they're letting people run through the woods to hunt. And my brother is from that area. And he said that he knew people who worked there, which obviously you, if you have thousands of people of coming, you're going to have a really large staff in order to like feed and house and yeah. take care of these people. And like, yes, you signed NDAs, but like an NDA isn't going to stop someone from just talking. An NDA is going to stop someone from making like a TikTok about it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, oh, you can't go post this online. But he said that there was like a senator that he had to coordinate like a choir singing to him when he woke up while he ate breakfast naked in front of them, like stuff like that. And I don't know how true or not true that is, you know?
Yeah.
Do I buy it.
I do.
But I'm also like, what choir are they going to get? Like, what choir are they going to hire for that? That's going to take that job on.
Who knows? Like money is that type of money. We can't even imagine.
Truly. Like, I don't know. I was just having this conversation. Dang it. I was just having this conversation with my husband. Like, if we had, you know, if we won $20 million, I have no fucking clue what I would do. Like, I would be very quiet about it, but I would also just, like, absolutely panic because suddenly you could do anything. And what the only anything I want to do is nothing, you know? I just want to, like,
imagine being one of those people who make that a day.
Yeah, exactly. Or that analogy comparing like billions of dollars to like minutes, where like $1 million is 11 minutes, but $1 billion is 31 years.
Yeah.
Like to just show the disparity there. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
If you got it, what would you do?
My brother told me they make movies about all of that kind of stuff. So when it happens in real life, we're not as shocked.
Is that it?
Yeah, that's why they make these movies. And I was like, damn, you may be onto something. Or it's on Hollywood's, something.
Because Hollywood's in on it. All of them.
Some of them.
Only the ones I don't like.
No, I'm worried that it's some of the ones I do like. And that's the problem.
Yeah, I just feel like if I focus all my energy, like, in, like, closer to home, and I don't think, like, too large scale about that stuff, then I can just, you know, let my brain be at peace for another day.
Yeah.
It's like if you, we kind of talked about this a little, like, a while ago, but even if those conspiracy theories are big, yeah, we could expose them. It would be awesome if, like, they were stopped, if some of that, if they're true. But, like, what are we really going to do, you know?
Mm-hmm. Because, again, the people making the decisions, if it is what you're saying, we could never touch it. They'll have us donezo before we do anything.
They will Manhattan Project us.
Yeah. On that note, before we get
before our mini becomes a regular episode again.
All right. We'll see you guys here soon.
Bye.
Bye.